Now is this working? Hello, testing. Yeah, let's see. Okay, I'm going to start again by saying that this is the 8th of June now, and we're continuing the discussion that I'm having with Professor Niebring with regard to his career that we interrupted yesterday for a break. So, do you recall exactly what we were talking about at the time? We kind of gotten into your laboratory after you had been given an appointment or taken a job as a director of the mass spec facility. And so we talked about instrumentation that you had purchased and the fact that you've gotten involved in ICR. What other things did you want to pick up on in that particular discussion?
I would like to mention that we discussed also the field ionization,
yes.
Field desorption. That was the end on the Ferien Mod 711 instrument, and that we developed a so-called an electron emission control unit to control the ion emission from the emitter to the counter electrode in the case of field desorption, because then that helped to handle the fragile emitters, which are 10 micrometer tungsten wires.
Mm-hmm.
They don't break then so easily. You could really control it in a way that you could have a stable ion emission current for hours even. Mm-hmm. And although that was later in time, but it had to do with the Drifschel ICR work, which I mentioned before,
mm-hmm.
that we worked on negative ions,
yes.
reacting with Newton molecules. So we had interest in negative ions, and that also gave the motivation to do negative ion field ionization and negative ion field desorption. And especially the negative ion field ionization, that is a very hard thing to do, because instead of tunneling an electron from a neutral molecule to the emitter, then you get a positive ion. In this case, you have to tunnel an electron from the emitter to the molecule.
Okay.
And emission of electrons from, a tungsten wire, it can give you an enormous amount of electron emission, but it has nothing to do with tunneling to a molecule. So you have to be very careful that you don't get something like an electron ionization of the molecule, hey, because of the avalanche of electrons.
Yeah.
So what we did is we lowered the potential difference between the emitter and the counter electrode.
Mm-hmm.
We increased the distance for that. In addition to that, and then we checked with tetracyanoethylene, which is a molecule which has a reasonably high electron affinity.
Mm-hmm.
And then we made the molecular radical anion of tetracyanoethylene, and then by varying the pressure of the tetracyanoethylene and then looking at the intensity of the molecular radical anion, that behaved it was proportional to the concentration of the neutrals in the gas phase.
Okay.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you have no a molecule there, there was then also not an electron emission, you see?
Okay.
So that we really were sure that we are dealing with a tunneling effect.
When you had these tungsten emitters, did you have to grow?
We did design ourselves a device to activate these tungsten wires ourselves.
Uh-huh.
In an atmosphere of benzonitrile.
Okay, so that was a given part of the experiment, is getting the...
Yeah, well, we had made that before already, yeah, so for the positive ions,
mm-hmm.
Because as I told earlier, the tungsten wires were too expensive for us, eh? And therefore you had to make this device, Or you could buy them, but then, of course, that required a lot of money.
Yeah.
If you buy them officially from the company, that was very high in price, but you had also small companies who made these wires. Eh?
Yeah.
But we decided to do it ourselves.
Was that a very difficult problem to grow the emitters?
No.
Okay.
No, not really. I mean, you have to find out the conditions, of course, but when you have found that out, then it is a standard procedure. Yeah?
Okay.
Also, because I've talked now about the field ionization of making negative ions in the gas phase, mm-hmm. but it also turned to very beneficial to do negative ion field desorption,
mm-hmm.
which had not done before by other people. But then you didn't need in the end to have activated wires. You could also work with smooth wires.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because if you put on, let's say, an salt,
mm-hmm.
Then the negative ions from that salt could be desorbed from the wire. Yeah?
Okay.
We also learned, of course, yeah, we did compounds like arginine, sugars, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you have a sample which is heavily contaminated with salts,
mm-hmm.
that is not so good for the emission of ions, because you get something like a sputtering. Suddenly there are ions desorbed, then not, so the field emission control unit had then problems to stabilize.
Mm-hmm.
But what we did, we diluted most of the time in that case, when there was too much salt, with polyethylene glycol, or polyethylene ethoxide, something like that,
mm-hmm.
a polymer.
Mm-hmm.
To mask a little bit the high concentration of the salts.
Sure.
And then it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So we have had a very good experience with field desorption, contrary to the common feeling about it, that had especially to do with the fragile character of the wires,
mm-hmm.
But with the field emission control unit, that was an excellent device to get it in the hands of people should have been capable to work with the instrument, but it didn't require so-called Fingerspitzengefühl. That is the German word for, and that was not required. And the emission of the ions, as I said before, you could control it in such a way that you had a stable ion current for hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could control the number of ions coming off the emitter. And that was all processed in the computer, so you accumulated the scans. Eh? So you did a scan,
mm-hmm.
and then accumulated all the time, and then you had the result. That was a very good thing.
The idea that you could have a stable ion current from that was pretty. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an excellent. I guess, and I know that most people consider the field ionization desorption techniques to be really challenging.
Yeah.
And I think they probably were compared to what you normally do, but once you meet the challenge by using your proper skills and knowledge, then you can obviously do quite a bit with it.
Yeah. By the way, Sweely,
yeah. mm-hmm.
he made also an emission control unit.
Uh-huh.
We didn't know that, of course, at that time. But I've seen later on the publication.
Sure.
And he had the same experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you do it right.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, he worked in the positive ions. For us, the new thing was that we not only could do positive ions but also negative ions.
Yeah.
That was, and I must say, we cooperated with Frans Rogen from the Bonn University about that, because. In the beginning, especially negative ion field ionization, that was critical to accept that, because, is that not electron emission, which then mm-hmm. is attached to the molecule? Is it pure field ionization? But he was convinced by our experiments, and we got cooperation further in the negative ions, especially the field desorption.
Mm-hmm.
But I mentioned before that we had a good relationship with the people at the University of Bonn.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned this because then it is better to understand about the Ferri and Mat machine, field ionization, field desorption, presented as one piece, so independent of the time
sure.
that things happened.
So you did this on the
Ferien Watt machine,
which is a high resolving power instrument.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah.
And you're getting to get accurate mass data and so on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure.
That's good.
And even we could heat, of course, the emitter a little bit so that you had also thermal induced fragmentation of the ions.
Ah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for structural elucidation or get structural information. I must say that organometallics, for example, we run them both in the positive ion mode and in the negative ion mode. So you could characterize the organometallic compound in that way, because most of the time field desorption doesn't show fragmentation. Yeah?
Right.
So you have a good idea about the molecular weight, but you have no structural information.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember a manganese cobalt complex in the positive ion mode. The whole complex was ionized intact.
Mm-hmm.
And when you turned over to the negative ion, then you had the cobalt part of it.
Mm.
So.
You developed, were you interested in doing a negative ion work so that you could work with compounds that were not amenable to positive ion analysis?
Well,
you want to do negative ion.
Yeah, exactly. That is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And because if you have a neutral compound and it can add a negative ion like an OH minus ion,
mm-hmm.
then you could, of course, do field desorption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So you could play in that way with it.
Mm-hmm.
Masses with regard to how the molecular weights, how high they could be.
Mm-hmm.
We have run between 4,000 and 5,000 daltons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Hans Schulten had the same experience. Yeah. If you go to higher masses, Matsuo from Japan, he presented at the International Mass Spectrum Conference in Oslo. And it was a Polish styrene molecule, as far as I remember. And he showed then that he could detect 10,000 daltons.
Mm-hmm.
But that was really the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we did that later with the GO4 sector instrument, but it is even further in time, so it's later in my career. If you had polymers, you could add, let's say, charged alkali ions like sodium, potassium, these kind of species.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could then make multiply charged.
Mm-hmm.
So we have had examples more or less at the end of my career, so in the mid-90s, where we had 7 alkali ions attached to a polymer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a 7 plus charged state. And that means that you can then detect high masses because of the highly charged.
Right.
It resembles like what the people doing nowadays in electrospray ionization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that has never been exploited further because I think what you also said, the field desorption technique was regarded as very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you had done this, you were aware of the multiply charging possibility. Did you use that information to then create the pseudo-mass molecular ion from that? So
yes.
You were able to...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So this is basically, you did some of the things that the people in the electrospray community were doing, did later.
Yeah,
you were doing them earlier with these.
Now, earlier, it was not. It was in the 90s. I think we have a publication around 94, 95
uh-huh.
in Rapid Communications, and electrospray was already used. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but for us that was to play around.
Uh-huh.
But that was not done on the Ferien Watt 711 instrument. That was done on a 4-sector GEOL machine.
GEOL?
Yeah, GEOL, and I think it is JMS, SX, SX, 2A or something like that. That, well, I have to look in the review article which I wrote, so not to be make errors in the numbers.
Yeah.
But it was the 4-sector machine,
okay.
which was installed in 91 in our group. That was during the year that the International Mass Spectrometry Conference was held in Amsterdam. And I managed to get a grant before the meeting to buy that instrument, and that was then installed in 91 in the lab. But that is much later in time, of course.
So where do you want to go from there? We've got the...
So now I would like to switch the time. Drexel ICR, we started that, and you know from the discussion in the interview that that was induced by the trip to the United States in 69. But then, having the VeriMAT 711 installed and working with that, then the reverse geometry mass spectrometry came up, where you could have the in a double focusing instrument first selection of ions by the magnet, and then do a collision or then analyze the mass selected ion beam, the fragments of this by scanning the electric sector. So the reverse geometry instrument was for that reason very a very nice instrument to do ion chemistry, because of the selection of mass. So I applied for such an instrument at the I call it then now for this moment the Dutch National Science Foundation for research, and they said, because it was an, a high amount of money for these instruments, do you know a place where you could do these collision activation experiments on mass-selected beams? And I said, yeah, in the lab of Fred McLafferty. So they said, well, you can get a grant for that and go to Fred McLafferty as a visiting scientist and do experiments there. So that induced, of course, my trip in 1974 to the lab of Fred McLafferty in Ithaca, New York State. And I stayed there, I worked there for, I think, 2 to 3 months. And we agreed, of course, in correspondence on what kind of problems we would like to like to study. And one of them was the phenonium ion. You know, that is an benzene ring with a so-called cyclopropane unit on it. So the two CH2 groups are attached to one carbon atom of the benzene ring. So that is the phenonium ion.
So how do you spell that?
Phenonium, that is P-H-E-N-O-N-I-U-M.
Okay.
Phenonium ion structure.
So that's a benzene ring with these two CH3 methyl groups.
CH2 groups, yes. CH2. It is actually an ethylene attached to one of the carbon atoms of the benzene ring.
Okay.
And that ion was in solution chemistry that gave a lot of debate between Brown and Weinstein. One of them thought it was indeed a phenonium ion, whereas the other said, no, it is like a windscreen wiper. So, it, you know, so, And that as an organic chemist, that was really interesting to see what a mass spectrometer could show. And so I took also the labeled compounds with me and then arrived in the lab of Fred, and then we worked on that. Together with Takao Nishishita from Japan, he was postdocing there, and Chris van der Zande from Belgium.
Yeah, those are, you published a paper with all those people on it?
Yeah, and with Fred, of course,
Okay. Okay, I'll just check the literature for...
Yeah, you can find the literature, because I have put a reference in the mass spectrometry review article which I wrote.
Very good.
And I had a good time in Fred's lab. Well, Takao Nishishita and Chris van der Ay were called by him the Three Musketeers. As you know, in the end, three papers came out of that visit, so that it was very successful. And, well, you know, we worked from 8:30 in the morning until late at night, and then that every day. And I didn't mind because I was very well eager to get the results, because I would like to show the people in the Netherlands that this was a very useful method for gas-phase ion chemistry.
So this was kind of like a proof of principle trip to see if you get...
To get money for a new for a reverse geometry instrument. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. But then also, in 1974, there was then the 22nd ASMS meeting in Philadelphia. So Fred went there with his group, and of course I joined the group there, and so I attended then that meeting. There are two important things, and again you see how important it is to travel and to meet people. First I met Michael Gross there for the first time.
Oh boy.
And in some way it immediately clicked between us. Mm-hmm. So we became very, very good friends. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I said yesterday to Michael, it would have been nice if we would live closer together. Hey? Mm-hmm. Then you could visit each other a little bit more.
Yeah.
Since then we have had very good contacts, and Michael has been in my home, and we have discussed ion chemistry, starting in the evening until 4:30 in the morning, and that I said, now the sun is coming up, it's better now to go to bed so that we don't get problems with our wives, etc. Yeah. But there was another thing then, which was very important. And that is, during that conference, Malcolm Isarov presented a paper on the first experiment done to show Fourier transform ion cyclotron resonance, Fourier transformation on ICR, and he showed the molecular ion of methane. You know, he did that experiment in 13 December 1973, as far as I think that is the date, 13 December 1973, together with Alan Marshall at the university from Vancouver in British Columbia. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
You okay?
British Columbia, I think, yes. listening to that lecture and doing myself Drifschel ICR, you can imagine that I was really excited about this method.
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. And I think that Michael, he was also doing Drifschel ICR, so he has perhaps had the same idea about it. But the audience was skeptical, hey, because they asked Malcolm Isarov, can you do it to get a broad mass range? Mm-hmm. And that was a problem. So I remember that Mel said at that time, in principle, of course, that's possible, but I need a very large grant, so much so that it's almost the whole National Science Foundation budget. And my colleagues are, of course, very nice, but not so nice that they don't get the money from the National Science Foundation. But the rest of the audience, nice but skeptical, hey, is that useful?
Yeah.
You can understand that, hey? Mm-hmm. And so after I returned to the Netherlands again, hey, from working in the lab of Fred McLafferty, attending the ASMS, meeting Michael, then as soon as I came back in the lab, I told, of course, the people there what I heard about the FDICR. And my question was, could we make such an instrument? And at that time, Jim Dawson, mentioned before, he was postdocing with me. He was from the group of Keith Jennings, had received his PhD there at the University of Warwick, and then joined my group. Jim was a wizard in electronics. He was also a registered accountant, was a physical chemist, He came from a very good family. He was the only child, but was an also a wealthy family, so he didn't have to work for his, yeah. Mm. But he was on the basis of a NATO grant in my group. Mm-hmm. And so Jim said, no way. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, but I had also we had also students from an electrotechnical high school from Amsterdam in our group, simple to practice, mm-hmm. with Frans Pinkse mentioned before, to build things electronically, mm-hmm. Yeah, to change things at instruments which we were operating. And Frans said to me that the microelectronics was developing very fast.
Okay.
And also the computer technology was developing very fast. Mm-hmm. So I repeated my question many times about can we build an FTICR? And then at the end of 78, Jim Dawson said, perhaps.
From no way to perhaps.
And when he said that, and I said, Jim, then we will do it. And I asked for a grant from the, well, the Dutch National Science Foundation. In the transcript, we can change that in the official term, yeah. And so I got a grant for him. And so we start on build the FTICR with all the designing of electronics, etc. on the 1st of April in 1979. Mm-hmm. That was there were the following people were involved. It was Jim Dawson, mm-hmm. Frans Pinkse, mm-hmm. Chris Kort, whom I mentioned before.
K-S-K-R-I-S.
Yeah, André Noest. André Noest is a new name, which. He was a master degree student, and a PhD student in my group.
That's N-O-U-S.
N-O-E-S-T. Mm-hmm. From the he came from the Vrije Universiteit and did his PhD with me.
Okay.
And he was heavily in interested in computers. Mm-hmm. So the communication with Chris Kort and him that helped also, of course. Now, then the instrumental workshop, the cell was designed, etc. And then it was planned in such a way, Mike, that the other PhD student, they could use all the time that Drifzel instrument. Mm, yeah, okay. I remember that Jim said in November 79, November 79, that he said, we are now at a point, do you want to go back, if we change the instrument to an FT-ICR, to a Drifzel ICR? Mm-hmm. But I said to Jim, how sure are you that the project will be successful? I'm not an electronic man. Yeah. Hey? Yeah, I was interested, but I could not do that kind of work. He said, well, I don't know. Well, Jim, then we should be able to get back to the old situation. Because otherwise the other PhD students could not do their work for their thesis. Okay, so that was decided. And then in 3 weeks' time, the instrument was converted from Drifzel to FT-ICR. But I would like to mention also, Jim made the radio frequency synthesizer himself.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Mm-hmm. This was really, he was a very strong person mentally, but he always had a nervous breakdown. Yeah. So we also found each other at night. And then Jim said, it cannot work. And then, from the discussion, okay, yeah. So that helped, yeah. And but there was also a discussion in the group that Jim was a hardware man, and so he said it should be hardware controlled.
Yeah.
But André Noest, he was more the computer-sized man, oriented man, and he said it should be software controlled. Mm-hmm. And that decision had to be made. And at that time we said, okay, then hardware controlled. Mm-hmm. Because our concern was if you did an FT-ICR scan, a chirp, then you looked at the signal, and then you had to accumulate these signals to get a reasonable signal-to-noise ratio. And Jim was convinced by hardware there was no problem to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Andre said it can also be done by software. But yeah, you realize also that the computer was a Minc 11 with a 32K memory. Minc 11.
Wow.
So it was very small.
32K?
Yeah. And we had then, of course, floppy disks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the reason why we said, okay, we do it hardware controlled.
Yeah.
If you look back, then the software-controlled approach is nowadays.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything is software-controlled.
Well, yeah, we are talking about the first Spectrum came out the 2nd of April 1980, so it was exactly 1 year plus 1 day that we had the first Spectrum from Acetone.
Mm-hmm.
And that instrument has been very successful to do basic ion molecule chemistry,
mm-hmm.
both positive ions and negative ions.
Great.
I must say many PhD studies came out of it, but also a cooperation internationally that people came to Amsterdam to do experiments with that kind of instrument. But, in between that period, from a transient coming to the idea of making an FTICR, since I returned from the lab of Fred McLafferty, so that was successful, mm-hmm. I was still thinking about the double focusing instrument with a reverse geometry, because that was the reason why I went to Fred.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had written a proposal. I think there were 35 projects described in detail.
Mm.
And I think I still have it at home.
So this for the reverse geometry?
Reverse geometry instrument, yeah, to have a project for it.